Good morning.
This is Let's Talk New Mexico. I'm your host, Kaveh Movahed. It's been a rough year and a half for all of us with lots of suffering and loss and grief. Today, we're going to try to take it on with a positive attitude. Halloween and Dia de los Muertos are days away. Halloween's a fun holiday to scare ourselves and poke fun at death, while the other offers a way to honor and remember those who've died ahead of us. We'll hear from a historian on how these holidays have been celebrated over time around the world and in New Mexico. We'll also talk to an indigenous museum director about Native understandings of the life cycle and remembrance. We'll hear from the organizer of the upcoming Before I Die NM Festival about other ways to celebrate the lives of lost loved ones or prepare for our own ends, and that can reduce the sadness and anxiety often associated with death. We'll hear from the Humanities Council about an event for storytellers at a cemetery next week. Then we'll finish the show with an industry specialist who will share some innovative ideas around processing human remains and how it can help with processing the loss of loved ones. We want to hear from you also. Do you honor past ancestors during Dia de los Muertos? Is Halloween a fun way to deal with the afterlife? Have you planned your own funeral or burial? Please reach out. Email us at letstalk@kunm.org or call in live at 505-277-5866. And don't forget that area code. We now have to use that when dialing phone numbers within the state. Okay, my first guest this morning is Nicolasa Chavez. She's the deputy state historian. Good morning, Nicolasa.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you so much for joining us today. Let's start with Dia de los Muertos. We already think of that holiday for remembrance of those who passed on ahead of us. You've written that it's not specifically Mexican, though, right? It's there's some cultural blending there.
There is cultural blending, and there's celebrations. Dia de los Muertos is something that is celebrated throughout the Americas. However, in each country, it's unique and different based on place, location, history, local traditions in those countries. So the Mexican one for us is simply the most famous, the most well-known. But other places like Ecuador celebrate. Early on, there was All Souls and All Saints Day here in New Mexico, which was very, not as much pageantry, very different than Dia de los Muertos, but it is the most famous one, the Mexican one.
Okay, can you tell us a little bit more about the celebrations?
Yes, so basically the blending of cultures that takes place, they come from ancient tradition. We do know through history and archaeology, anthropology, that cultures around the world have celebrated death or had a special way of remembering the departed, honoring ancestors, and that'd be no different. In Mesoamerica, there were big celebrations that originally took place around August, which was during a time of harvest down there. In Europe, there were traditions going on roughly around the same time. If you look way back at ancient Celtic tradition in Ireland and Scotland, there were ceremonies honoring the dead, and of course, throughout Europe, this would happen. And with the rise of Christianity and the onset of Catholicism, different dates were played around with to honor first saints that had passed, and then eventually adding a day that would honor all souls, so not just all saints, but all souls, meaning your ancestors, your loved ones, and very specific ways of celebrating there. Included visiting cemeteries, holding a special mass, lighting candles for the departed, and also leaving out soul cakes. And those traditions, when the Spanish arrived in the Americas, blended with what they found here and actually changed the dates of things taking place in the Americas. So whereas the ancient Mesoamerican and also the Aztec tradition of honoring the dead were more around August, those were moved to be placed around All Souls and All Saints Day on the Catholic calendar, which fell on November 1st and November 2nd. What we refer to as Halloween was actually the eve of All Saints and All Souls. So the 31st being the eve of All Hallows, turning into Halloween as we know it today, which also originally was something that honored the departed, honored our lost loved ones, and again, that time of sharing meals with the spirits. It was believed that the veil between the world was thin that time of year, so the departed could come to to visit you.
Okay. I'm wondering, you know, what one of the very well-known things related to Dia de los Muertos are those calaveras, the calavera statues of skeletons doing something fun like playing music or riding bicycles. What are those about and how do they get incorporated into the holiday?
Yes, again, based on ancient tradition and the cultural mixing between the Spanish when they arrived, so you have this European native blend going on where the skull itself has an ancient symbolism. European tradition, if you saw images of the skull, say in images of the saints, which carry on today in New Mexico, the soul represented mortality. So it reminded us of death. And it wasn't meant to be a negative thing, but it was meant to remind us to live a good life, to be good humans, to be kind, to do charity, penance if we did something bad. But the skull reminded us that we are all mortal. In ancient tradition in Mexico, the skull itself represents death. However, again, the views on death were very different than how we feel about them today in our society where, you know, it's almost we're not supposed to talk about death, death is negative, all of these connotations. The skull reminded us that death is a natural part of the cycle, and the representative, the skeleton represents all of us, meaning whether you're rich, whether you're poor, no matter what color your skin is, no matter where you come from, what family you grew up in, we all are skeletons underneath our skin. And we all die no matter what, no matter who we are. We can't escape that. But it's not viewed as a bad thing. It's viewed as the natural cycle of life. And that the imagery you see with the Dia de los Muertos that makes the Mexican one especially so famous and widely embraced by the U.S. It's one of the fastest growing holidays here in the U.S. But the skeletons represent our loved ones and what they would love most and what they'd be doing in life. So say your great uncle was a champion, track and field, ran and won races and still jogged up until his dying days. He was old, you know, lived a great life. You might have a skeleton, you know, a calavera of that person, of your uncle, running. You very often see figures on bicycles, a lot of music. One, if your relatives loved music or you had a musician in the family, that figure could represent that loved one. But in general, too, music is such a huge part of these Dia de los Muertos celebrations. And you'll see bands and groups of musicians dressed in calavera makeup, the skeleton makeup that we're so used to seeing, and just groups of bands marching in the streets, playing music. It's a very festive time. So again, death is looked at this time of year especially. You are celebrating the return of the spirits of your loved ones. So you would be celebrating with music and festivities. So you will actually hear music in the cemetery. You will hear music in the streets. So a lot of the really popular skeleton figures you'll see today are bands of musicians, or you'll see a whole mariachi group or a solo skeleton playing guitar. You'll see somebody dressed up in the style of La Catrina singing at a microphone, but very common images throughout.
So I guess I'm wondering then, should we think of Dia de los Muertos as festive or reflective or sad? Maybe a little bit of all of these?
I think it's a little bit of everything because, one, we are all human. So we all feel sadness at times. Any of us that have lost a loved one, we know, you know, there's that initial pain, then the denial, all the stages you go through, finally acceptance. And then down the line, you remember them and you have wonderful memories about them. And, you know, different families might have different ways of honoring somebody who's departed, like especially birthdays are really important. But this time of year, you're remembering them. So, of course, that sadness might come. And what I was going to say is sadness comes randomly. You can be driving in your car one day, a memory of your loved one hits, and you start crying out of the blue, out of nowhere. So that's the human side. We have that sadness attached. But then we have the memories. And very often, a lot of those memories make us smile. We'll remember something funny the loved one did, or a favorite song comes on the radio. And during Dia de los Muertos, it's that feeling of the joy of that person, remembering their spirit, remembering how they made you feel. And I think the really important time is you're generally not doing this alone. It's a family celebration. It's a big community celebration. You know, it's also a big harvest celebration. The amounts of food you see this time of year for these ceremonies, the ofrendas that are decorated in honor of the loved ones are just loaded with autumn's bounty, and you're sharing these meals. And those would be the times of year normally when your loved one was alive that family comes together to share, honor each other, honor the departed. So mostly joyful, but there's always that tinge of sadness with remembrance.
I guess I want to ask about Halloween then. We have a lot of fun with it, but do the historical roots have more to do with honoring or remembering the dead?
Yes, historically, yes. It was a time to honor the dead. It was a time also to honor your ancestors, your departed, and invite them into your home as well. You could do, again, family celebration. Again, end of October, beginning of November was the closing out of the big harvest season, especially up in Scotland and Ireland. It began the dark half of the year. So the celebrations, just like ancient celebrations in Mexico, went on for several weeks. So today, Halloween in our country is one day. Also, we don't have a national holiday. We celebrate Halloween, but we don't take that time off for that kind of reflection. Today in Scotland and Ireland, it's a national holiday, and people actually take time off school, time off work to really remember the departed and celebrate. So historically, you'd celebrate your lost loved ones. There was that tradition of lighting candles, leaving out soul cakes for the departed, sharing a food with the departed. Now, where the costumes and the crazy revelry that we have today that comes in, the poking fun at death that we do now, has origins back then too, because it was believed that if that veil between the worlds was thin, your loved ones and the good spirits could come visit you. But the fact that that window was open also means that evil spirits could get in. So you did a lot of things to make sure you kept the evil spirits away. And one of those was using frightening and scary masks to try to scare the evil spirits away. And of course, that would mean you would hope, and you know, it was believed your loved one knew who you were, your loved one knew how to find you, so the mask wouldn't scare them away. It was dark. The nights were really dark already. We're way further north from the equator. So another tradition we do now is the jack-o'-lantern and carving pumpkins, but old traditions, it would be turnips and root vegetables that would be carved and used as lanterns. One, to light the way for the spirits to come in and visit, but also if you were traveling, say, from home to another house to celebrate and remember, you would have something to light your path and ward off those evil spirits. Another interesting one that we do today now at New Year's time that stems from back then is the making of loud noises, banging of pots and pans, again, driving away evil spirits. It's done at New Year's now. Usually that tradition at midnight of banging pots and pans and hollering actually was to keep evil spirits out of your house and make sure your house was kind of cleansed and good and ready to go for the whole year. So,
okay, now you're talking about more modern traditions, and I can't help but wonder, I think you've written that Halloween and especially Dia de los Muertos celebrations are relatively new in New Mexico. Is that right? Are there other more traditional celebrations that we've done here longer?
Yeah, well, they're relatively new for sure, because we do know European tradition here, you know, started a little over 400 years ago. So there would be local native customs, which you're going to hear about from Matthew in a bit. But when the Spanish arrived, they didn't really do full-on Dia de los Muertos or these old Halloween celebrations here. So we didn't have a lot of the revelry that we see today or the traditions that we hear about from the past, but mainly through our colonial period, it was the mass that would be given on All Saints and All Souls Day. So you still had 2 days of remembrance and honoring. Cemeteries weren't as big of a thing. The population was way smaller at the time. So you did have burial grounds and areas, and it might have been that your loved one was on your actual land, and you could visit right there and decorate where they were buried. We do know a lot of times if somebody died out on the trail, often they were buried where they were left along the Camino Real. So these areas of remembrance were harder to get through to. But many families had home altars in their homes, because also at the time there wasn't a church in every single village in New Mexico. They were few and far between.
So. Okay, Nicolas, I'm sorry, I got to pause you right there. This is Let's Talk New Mexico on 89.9 KUNM. I'm Kaveh Movahed. We are taking your calls about Halloween, Dia de los Muertos, and honoring ancestors who've passed on. Call 505-277-5866 to share your ideas. You can also email us at letstalk@kunm.org or tweet using the hashtag #LetsTalkNM. We'll be right back.
Support comes from REDW Wealth, a locally owned fiduciary investment advisory firm, providing financial planning, investment management, and consulting to New Mexican individuals, families, and businesses. REDWWealth.com.
Support comes from Il Vicino Restaurants in Albuquerque and Santa Fe, open for indoor and patio dining. Sunday through Thursday, 11 till 9, Fridays and Saturdays, 11 till 10. Dine-in, carry-out, and delivery service available. IlVicino.com.
Cellist Yo-Yo Ma was born to a Chinese family in Paris. He's now a longtime U.S. citizen. Pianist Emmanuel Axe is also an immigrant. He moved from Poland to Canada to New York. They'll share stories and music for National Immigrants Day on the next Performance Today from APM.
Weekday mornings at 9 on KUNM.
Welcome back to Let's Talk New Mexico. I'm Kaveh Movahed. We are talking this morning about death and remembrance and ways to think about the ancestors who've passed on ahead of us, but also plan for our own future endings. We do have a caller. We have Glenn from Jemez Springs. Glenn, go ahead.
Good morning. Thanks for doing this. I'm getting ready for Halloween up here in Jemez Springs with the kids that come by. I used to be a counselor. And I would just recommend to people to do what I have done even with divorces, to write a goodbye letter to the loved one. It's part of the grief process and quite helpful. People will do that up here and then either burn it or tear it up and down the river with it. Another thing, when I was a chaplain at the old St. Joe's Hospital in Albuquerque, one time, a death of a Navajo Diné person resulted in the family taking the body themselves in their pickup truck and going back to their home. And I think that's an interesting kind of thing that can happen in New Mexico. Here in Sandoval County, we can actually bury the dead in our yards as long as we're 30 feet away from any water source. And I don't know anybody who's done that, but when my mother died, I put up a cross in the front yard and have some of her ashes there. And then that goes to the other thing I wanted to say about Science Care out of Phoenix. If you sign up with them, and you can Google that and go online and get the phone number, I'm signed up with them, my wife will be. My mother was, my brother was, my mother-in-law was. At the time of death, a local mortuary will dispatch a hearse to pick up the body, take it to Denver, where a month of study is done, and then at their expense, they cremate and mail the black plastic box of the ashes back to the loved one. I've gone and gotten my mother's ashes, my mother-in-law's ashes from our little local post office here in Jemez Springs, and it really is another part of grieving and grief work that's quite important, and I would suggest people who are interested to contact Science Care.
Thank you so much, Glenn. We appreciate you calling and sharing today. Those are nice stories and also some good points you made there about helping out with the grieving process. I like the idea of writing a letter. Maybe we'll get into that a little more a bit later in the hour. Now, I'd like to introduce the interim director of the Museum of Indian Arts and Culture in Santa Fe, Dr. Matthew Martinez from the Pueblo of Okehuenge. Thank you for joining us, Matthew.
Sangitamo, good morning. Buenos dias. Great to be here with you all.
Okay, now it's my understanding that in some native communities, the subject of death is one to avoid. It's just not talked about. But that's not exactly always true for some of New Mexico's Pueblo people. Is that right?
Well, I can speak as a Pueblo person, more specifically as a Tewa person, but it's really important to note that among the 20 Pueblo nations, there are differences in perspectives and practices. And so, I'm sharing a very specific experience, and generally we can talk about that the entire process of how we think about death and dying is a very private matter for the most part. And generally, as a Pueblo person, and really this hits to the core of Pueblo culture, is that honoring and remembering is very much a daily practice. And this is really at the core of what makes a Pueblo person. And it's focused on honoring all those who came before and all of those that gave us life. And that includes humans and animals and insects and clouds and rain and everything connected to relationship. And so that's really the significance of honoring anything that has passed on, really beyond how we think of us as humans.
Do you think that this comes from, ideas of circular time and life cycles versus the kind of more linear time European cultures brought to the region with a kind of definite beginning and ending?
Yeah, I think this really hits at the core of relationships. And so, and this really starts off every morning as a Pueblo person. You know, when the sun rises, that is our first offering of remembering all those who came before, and offering a simple gesture of cornmeal and saying thanks for a beautiful morning and thanks for giving us life and sunshine. And so it's a very simple act, but in our Tewa traditions and languages, there's layers of meaning within these ritualistic practices.
I'm wondering if you can talk a little bit about how colonization may have changed traditional death or remembrance practices with, Spanish or American influences.
Well, I mean, as we know, New Mexico experienced a very violent period of colonization, and some would argue that has really never ended. It's ongoing, but I think the biggest impact was the influence of Christianity and Catholicism, and that actually continues very much today on a track where we can think about these two parallel ways of being Pueblo and also being Catholic, and that oftentimes these traditions are blended within a typical feast day or ceremony where there would be a traditional Catholic mass followed by buffalo dances throughout the day. And so that really is a larger continuum. And rituals and ceremonies are really focused about seeking life and subsistence. It's not this big secret of what do Pueblo dances mean and what do Native traditions mean. It's really focused on survival, on good hunting and good planting rituals. And if Catholic traditions were able to include that, and at the core of that is really a sense of spirituality that a lot of Pueblos did adapt to over time. And, I can say there's a continuum of that, of Pueblos, some being more Catholic-focused and others, further down that continuum of not having anything to do with Catholicism. So it's really a personal and community practice that varies across tribes.
Okay, earlier we had a caller, Glenn, who spent some time working in a hospital, and he relayed a story of, you know, Dene people in particular passing on, and the families would, you know, come with a truck and take the body back home. I'm wondering if it's what you can tell us about kind of the Navajo experience when it comes to passing on.
You know, I'd be reluctant to speak on behalf of another tribe, but I can say that that is really common among a lot of Native communities, is really the simple act of picking up your loved one yourself mm-hmm. and taking them home, and home as a resting place in the community. And a lot of family gatherings and food offerings and the quote, grieving time, happens in the home. Homes are very sacred, and where they gave us life. A lot of kids and newborns were birthed at home, and so that's where you would go when you pass on. So it's this larger connection of relationships, for sure.
I'm thinking back to when you told us about, you know, offering corn and thinking about the ancestors. Is that more of being thankful for the ancestors for your own existence, or are you remembering and kind of grieving particular lost ones, lost relatives? I'm sorry.
I wouldn't say particularly grieving. It's about honoring and remembering that relationships of where we come from. And this reminds me of a story which I'll share with you. I have a 12-year-old son, and not too long ago after school, we went out to Sonic to have an ice cream. And while we were there just park eating the ice cream, I asked him, "Do you taste the clouds in your ice cream?" And he looked at me kind of puzzled, and I said, "Well, where does ice cream come from?" And he said, "Well, it's the cows from the milk." And I said, what do cows eat? And he said, grass. That's they feed on grass. And then I asked him, what feeds grass? How does grass grow? It comes from the rain. Rain makes things grow. And I said, well, where does the rain come from? And he said, oh, the clouds. And so it was just this aha moment about the simple act of really just eating ice cream in a social setting embodies this larger connection that everything that we eat and do is connected to a world view. And if you get that concept, that really is the core of indigenous spirits and Pueblo sensibilities of honoring all those relationships.
That's a beautiful story, Dr. Martinez. Thank you so much for sharing. Okay, we got an email from Venny. Venny says, "My brother Lane died more than a year ago. Finally, in early October, we honored him at a small family gathering in Colorado. Because he'd been a musician, saxophone and dance bands, violin and symphony orchestras, and because he was a letter writer, I combined those two talents. I read through his letters to me and to my parents and selected bits about music. Then I found songs he wrote about on YouTube. My great nephew kindly read the excerpts and brought up the songs on his phone. Then at Golden Cemetery, I read part of a short poem he wrote when he was 19 describing how studying interfered with his music. Quote, he lived in a world of music, Johnny Mathis, Johnny Ray, music flowing from a jukebox in the grill across the way. With no prompting from me, my great-grandniece's boyfriend got out his phone, set it on the gravestone, and played a Johnny Mathis tune. Then, when he switched to Johnny Ray, my great-niece and great-nephew spontaneously joined hands and consecrated the gravesite with a lively swing dance. I imagine my brother, who died at 81, looking down with much pleasure." Thank you so much for sharing that, Venny. I'd like to take this time to acknowledge that we at KUNM are nearing the anniversary of our own loss. Hannah Colton died last November. She was our news director and friend. She dedicated herself to serving her community, and we keep trying to follow her lead. After she passed, we did some reporting on suicide and grief, and we capped off a rough period with a two-hour radio memorial showcasing some of Hannah's work for underrepresented communities. We hope that work did... We hope that work we did to memorialize her helped some listeners cope with their own loss, while it also helped us celebrate the life of someone we love. You can find that memorial linked at the bottom of the webpage for this show at KUNM.org. Now, I'd like to introduce a couple guests who are in the studio with us, something we haven't done for quite a while here at KUNM. First, Gail Rubin from the Before I Die NM Festival and Bethany Tabor from the New Mexico Humanities Council.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Hi.
Thanks for being here. It's really nice to have faces smiling back at me this morning. We've been exclusively doing a phone show for quite a while because of pandemic, but we are all vaccinated and we're playing it safe. First for Gail, before we get into the festival, tell us about your work generally. You kind of have an intriguing career.
Yes, my title is the Doyen of Death. I'm a pioneering deaf educator, a certified thanatologist. For 11 years, I've been talking about planning ahead for end-of-life issues. I write books, I do YouTube videos, and I hold the Before I Die New Mexico Festival. I'm a speaker as well. And I find bringing a light touch to what many consider a dark topic to be a great way to break down resistance to talking about something that's going to happen to all of us at some point in our lives.
Okay, the Before I Die New Mexico Festival is coming up soon. Tell us about it. What is it?
It starts this Saturday, October 30th. It's 4 days until November 2nd of in-person and online events to help us think about, talk about, and do something about our 100% mortality rate. Saturday and Sunday, we're meeting in person at Strongthorn Mortuaries Reception Center. It's there on Cole. That was built in 1923. Fascinating building. We're going to do a tour of the building. We've got sessions about history of funeral service, including Abraham Lincoln, the Civil War, and that impact on embalming and funeral service in the United States. We're talking about medical advance directives, questions you need to answer. We've got sessions about grief, but we've also got 2 days of online sessions, Monday and Tuesday. And by the way, these in-person sessions will also be available online if you don't want to come out into public.
Okay. And Bethany, you're also involved with the Before I Die Festival. You have your own event kind of at the tail end there called Cemetery Stories. Tell us about that.
Yeah. So Cemetery Stories is a story slam, a live storytelling event that is taking place at Historic Fairview Cemetery, which is a cemetery that dates all the way back to the 1880s.
1881.
Amazing. And it's full of rich history about New Mexico, about Albuquerque. In addition to sharing those stories, we've invited members of the community from all around New Mexico, Taos, Santa Fe, Albuquerque, to tell their own stories about death and dying. A lot of them are honoring and memorializing their loved ones. It's going to be really special.
Okay. That is a ticketed event. You can find a lot more information on the website for the Before I Die New Mexico Festival. There's a link on our page at KUNM.org. We're going to pause for just a moment. You're listening to Let's Talk New Mexico on 89.9 KUNM. I'm Kaveh Movahed. Stay right there. We'll be back in a minute.
Feet are your foundation. Native Americans are disproportionately affected by several conditions that can cause foot problems, including diabetes, high blood pressure, and obesity. We'll hear about ways to avoid problems and stay on your feet on the next Native America Calling.
Weekday mornings at 11 on KUNM.
Did you know KUNM accepts unwanted vehicles, like that car you've had parked in your driveway and don't need anymore? Maybe it's time to let it go. If you're ready, give us a call today. We'll have it picked up for free, handle all the paperwork, and you'll get a tax deduction. It's easy, and it really helps support KUNM. Get started by calling 888-KUNM-CAR. That's 888-586-6227.
Good morning. Welcome back to Let's Talk New Mexico on KUNM. There's still time for you to share your ideas about normalizing talking about death. Call 505-277-5866 and tell us what you've shared with your family or friends, or tweet with the hashtag Let's Talk NM. Bethany Tabert from the New Mexico Humanities Council. We just briefly mentioned the upcoming event, Cemetery Stories, where storytellers will come and share stories at the grave sites or at the cemetery. This is sponsored by the New Mexico Humanities Council. We're not totally comfortable talking about death yet. Was there any concern from people you've talked to that cemetery stories might be offensive or in bad taste?
Actually, no. A lot of people have been, everybody that I've heard from, have been really on board with this idea. I think that people are looking for the space and the time to talk about death, to think about this, because people... sometimes if you try to bring up death and dying in a polite conversation, people will look at you as though you have three heads. And so, but it's something that, as Gail said, we all experience and we all have questions about it. We all have experienced the loss of a loved one, or we know about other people losing loved ones. And so it's something that people are curious about, especially after years and years of deep repression in this country and in the West.
Okay. I see we have another email from Johnny and Valerie Barraza. Let's see. My wife and I both celebrate Dia de los Muertos all year. We have a rolling altar in our 1965 Chevy van, which we show at various car shows here in New Mexico. And then a few years back in California, we also dress up when we can for the occasion. Our altars are dedicated to family who have passed away recently and in the past. Too many to post. There are a few photos of us and our van. I'm sorry. Here are a few photos. Those, of course, we're not able to share on the radio. Okay, Gail Rubin, are there other aspects of the festival that will help people with grief that they're already experiencing, or is the rest more geared toward planning for the future?
Well, we do have a Death Cafe conversation each day of the festival. Two in person, two online. But we also do have speakers about grief. The November 1st is the start of Children's Grief Awareness Month. And on October 30th, we will have a virtual event called Healing, How to Heal Hearts, Grief Recovery for Adults and Children. And we have the grief... the Children's Grief Center here in New Mexico is very renowned. Jade Bach Richardson, from the executive director, will be on that along with Heather Lee. She's a grief recovery specialist, so she'll be talking about the adult part. But I'm very excited about November 1st. We have a session with Todd Van Beck, who's a funeral educator, and the title of his talk is Grumpy, Cranky, Fussy, the Unspoken Symptoms of Grief. Because grief does take many different forms, and you don't know what you're dealing with. Because the way our society has evolved, we don't walk around with black armbands to say, I am in mourning, so people know to treat you with a little more kindness and sensitivity. So when you run into somebody who's giving you a hard time, it could be that they're grieving, and we need to learn better how to recognize and respond.
Okay, thank you, Gail. I see we have another caller. We have Ellen from Albuquerque on the line. Good morning, Ellen. Go ahead.
Good morning, everybody. You know, first of all, I just wanted to say that you're right. It does take many, many forms because I've had losses in the past, and you know, the emotions are a roller coaster. So, but my mom passed last year. Not from the COVID, fortunately, but it was during the lockdown period, and that we couldn't do anything. We couldn't hold any services of any kind or anything like that. So that kind of thing got put on hold. At least now, my sister is planning to take the ashes from my mom and take her where my dad was laid to rest in Alamogordo, but since I use a wheelchair, I'm not gonna go because the terrain is not wheelchair friendly. So I said, as long as you put the you know, send me some pictures via email that you and Leonard, who's my brother-in-law, you know, are there. That's fine with me. And then I can put the closure together that way. And also, way back in pre-COVID, my husband's brother passed, and we went to Minneapolis, Minnesota for a memorial there, and we had a nice one there. It was great, but it take, you know, at least now we're able to move on, closure, you know, so hopefully, and I can always help with some of that too. Like I said, I've lost people and it takes many forms, so
yeah. Thank you, Ellen. Yeah, thanks so much for sharing. I bet, you know, Gail Rubin, you've probably heard a lot of similar stories over the last 18-ish months, right, of people losing loved ones but not being able to celebrate.
Well, and that's been a big issue, people putting off funerals and memorial services because, you know, first we were limited to 10 people in person or outdoor graveside services. Zoom became very, very well used by all of us in so many situations, but I actually had a relative die back at the end of August of COVID, and they did a Zoom graveside service for him. So we've had to adjust to the social distancing to keep us all safe. And when you take something away, like a funeral service, it's been very interesting because before the pandemic, a lot of people are like, don't have a funeral for me. It's not that important. Well, you take that opportunity away and people are like, hey, funerals are important. And we need to recognize and take the time to be together with people, either virtually or in person, as the situation allows, to support each other through a loss.
Okay, thank you, Gail. We do have a third guest live in the studio with us this morning, Alexandra Joe. She's the culture and content manager for Parting Stone, a Santa Fe company that's introduced innovation to afterlife care in the way they process cremated remains. We'll get back to that in a moment. But Alexandra, I think you want to add something there.
Yeah, and good morning. Thank you for having me on. In my role as culture and content manager for Parting Stone, I've found in my research people are really putting off memorials more and more. We're seeing that due to the pandemic, that was a huge issue because we're having to find new ways to create rituals around death while keeping our loved ones who are still alive safe. And, you know, virtual memorials have been a huge part of that. And now that the vaccine is circulating and people are getting vaccinated, we're seeing people want to travel to do less traditional things with human remains and their loved ones in order to memorialize. And that kind of rounds in nicely to what Parting Stone offers, which is a completely new form of human remains. It's no longer cremated remains. It's called solidified remains. And so we can talk about that when you're ready.
Sure. Well, let's go for it. What are they? What are Parting Stones?
Okay, great. So Parting Stone offers solidified remains, which are a completely new and alternative form of human remains to ashes after cremation. So instead of receiving a bag of quote unquote ashes, that is not an industry term, we call them cremains, you would receive a box of smooth stones. They're kind of like river stones. So they are safe to hold and touch. They are easy to travel with. They're environmentally friendly to leave out in nature. They don't dissolve and break down over time. And so you can have a tangible way to continue having a relationship with your loved one after they've passed with solidified remains.
Now, what reasons do people have for wanting this service? How do people use the stones?
Oh, well, that's a two-part question. Yeah, so our company did some Google Analytics research recently, and 8,000 people a month Google, what do I do with ashes? What do I do with cremated remains? There are a huge number of people in the United States and around the world that have cremation, their loved ones wanted cremation, they've chosen it for whatever reason, and then they don't know what to do afterwards, because we've had hundreds of years to create rituals and memorial services around burial, but we've really only had 30 or 40 years to try and come up with how to memorialize people after cremation, and people don't know what to do. So they end up putting these boxes and bags of ashes in their garage, in their basement, and kind of forgetting about them. And it's because ashes aren't very comfortable. They're messy. They blow back in your face when you try and scatter them. They can get, you know, spilled on the carpet, and then grandma is gone. So Parting Stone actually solves the problem of what to do with ashes and offers families tangible ways to memorialize by traveling, by sharing. And that's a lot of what people are doing. We find that families love to share the remains because an average person yields between 40 and 60 stones. So there's plenty to go around for the whole family. Friends come over, pick their favorite stone, take them home so that they can have that relationship and that memorial for themselves. And, you know, solidified remains are not a keepsake. We are a new form of remains. And so it is really innovating the death care space, because I don't think there's been a new form of human remains to hit the market since cremation. So,
okay.
Yeah.
I want to go back to Gail and Bethany. Have either of you heard of any other kinds of innovative ways to handle the remains of the deceased?
Yeah. Oh, there have been so many. Sending ashes into space. You don't send all of them, just a small bit, but there are a number of companies who do that. And one's called Celestis, flies out of Spaceport America here in New Mexico. Mm-hmm. You can mix them into glass and make artwork and jewelry. I've seen paintings done with cremated remains, to make a painting of the loved one with their own cremated remains.
You can tattoo with cremated remains.
Mixed
into the ink.
Pressed into vinyl records.
Vinyl records, indeed.
There's a place off the coast of Florida, about 3 miles out, that it's called Memorial Reef, and they put the cremated remains into these sculptures underwater, and you can scuba dive.
Also making reef balls.
Right. So
yeah.
To
Tune
build
Society,
up.
Eternal yep. Reef. There are yep. a few of these.
Yeah.
Okay. I can't help but wonder about the Catholic Church or other church groups, religious organizations, maybe objecting to treating remains in these ways.
The Vatican does not approve of any of that.
They're buried. So if you can make
buried in a Catholic cemetery or interred in a niche wall.
Yeah. So that is recent that the Catholic Church has said that cremation is okay.
Well, actually, Vatican II, they said cremation was okay.
Mm-hmm.
It's just people didn't get the message until it really started taking off. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. A couple years ago, it was one of their papers that said, okay, you can be cremated, but you can't leave them at home. You can't scatter them. You got to put them in a Catholic cemetery.
Mm-hmm. There's also composting, human composting.
Recompose.
Yeah. Which is in Washington and Seattle.
That's a wonderful company.
And alkaline hydrolysis. Yes.
Right, which is, you know, what's sometimes called
cremation,
but
it's,
they don't use water. But still, it's a, you know, another option. And then
more
there's also, like, better place forests, right, where you can pick a tree,
go to a
national forest and pick a tree, and that's your memorial, and your person is scattered near that tree.
And, of course, donating your body to science. And we are having a panel as part of the Before I Die Festival about whole body donation versus organ and tissue donation.
Right.
And you can get a free cremation with the whole body donation.
Right.
And we'll be explaining all about that.
I have an article that I just wrote last year on this for Connecting Directors. So more information can be found there.
Okay. We'll get a link up on our website right after the show. I see we have another caller. We have Lori from Sandia Park. Lori, go ahead.
Hello.
Good morning.
Hi. Are you able to hear me?
We can all hear you.
Okay. Well, I just wanted to share briefly an amazing experience that I had when my older brother died. It was sudden. He was shot on the street in New Orleans by a masked bandit, and it was around this time of year. And I strongly felt that I wanted to be able to go to New Orleans and just sit with his body after this, you know, absolutely horrific, drastic ending of my brother's life. I wasn't able to do that. And what I did instead was I began a series of sittings in the evening after dark when the kids were to bed, where I took some cutouts that they'd made with their dad that kind of looked like sugar skulls. And I put them over a candle of the Virgin of Guadalupe on the wall behind a table that had a shiny surface. I'm an artist, so this is kind of visual. And then I one by one moved the sugar skulls down over the candle onto the table where there was a pool of light because it was a shiny table. And I did that a number of times over the course of weeks after my brother's sudden, horrific death. And it was a beautiful sense of just sitting there with the sugar skulls that represented, the dead people or the death process, going into this pool of light on the bottom on the table. So I ended up with all of the cutouts in the pool of light. And then on the seventh day of the seventh week, after having done this every evening when I could afford the time away from, putting young children to bed, I looked up at another a star that I had on the wall, and I realized that, something has happened. My brother is free now to go, and I witnessed this whole process of his life somehow through an afterlife. And it just hit me as soon as I realized that on that seventh day of the seventh week, that's exactly what happens in the Bardo. It's a passage of 49 days when the soul of the person is liberated from going through, things kind of like Dante's seven levels of hell. And they're liberated. And for me, the whole process was one of having witnessed what I could for him, that he had in wherever he was now, the happiest, best next life or incarnation, whatever it is you want to think about that happens after our loved ones die. So it was an incredible process of witnessing.
Okay, thank you, Lori. We really appreciate you sharing that with us. That's quite a story. We also got a caller, Jose, who couldn't stay on the line, but says Dia de los Muertos should always be a celebration, just like a birthday, and people should remember that it's a happy occasion. We are nearly out of time. Let's try for one last caller. We have John from Albuquerque.
Well, I wanted to add something about the woo-woo side of death. We're going to have a psychic. It's part of one of our festival sessions. So,
thank you, Gail. Yeah. Okay, go ahead, John.
Yes, hi.
30 seconds left.
I'm a K-12 educator who worked in private, public, and charter schools. And I found that incorporating Dia de los Muertos into my classroom practice was really important, particularly for young children. It gives them a chance to process issues around death, which are often a no-talk issue, and also to share their beliefs about what happens afterwards.
Okay, thank you so much for calling, John. This is my least favorite part of the show, when I have to say we've run out of time. Thanks to everyone who've called in or wrote to us, and thanks so much to our guests, Nicolasa Chavez, Matthew Martinez, Gail Rubin, Bethany Tabor, and Alexandra Joe. You can find out more about the Before I Die Festival, about Parting Stone, and about cemetery stories on our website, kunm.org. One of the easiest ways to get over the cultural stigma of talking about death is to just do it. Please keep sharing your thoughts on Twitter, hashtag Let's Talk NM, on Facebook, search for KUNM Radio, or email us, letstalk@kunm.org. Our engineer this morning is Marino Spencer. Daniel Montano handled the phones. Robert Maldonado live tweeted for us, and Megan Kamrick produced the show. I'm Kaveh Movahed. This is Let's Talk New Mexico on 89.9 KUNM.